This program is intended for a print-impaired audience and is brought to you by Audio Journal. Since You Asked is a specialty show that includes articles and columns on advice, commentary, and opinion. This program is funded by the Memorial Foundation for the Blind and the Massachusetts Commission for the Blind. Views expressed in this program are those of the authors or publications and do not necessarily reflect the opinions of Audio Journal, its board of directors, staff, or its volunteer readers. My name is Alita, and I am your volunteer reader. We will start today with Social Cues by Philip Galanis from the April 22nd, 2026, New York Times. My parents are obsessed with food and weight. Help! When I was 10, my parents started dieting, and they never stopped. I am now 38, and they are 68. They equate thinness with good health. When I was 13 and wore a size 0 jeans, my mother enrolled me in a weight loss program. My parents lectured me frequently about getting my normal weight under control. By 16, I had an eating disorder that I've struggled with for decades, though I now am in recovery. Last year, they started taking semaglutides. They eat very small portions, and when they go to restaurants, they exclaim about the gigantic serving sizes and try repeatedly to push most of their meals onto others. As part of my recovery, I try not to talk about food and weight. Is there a constructive way to ask them to do the same when I'm around? Signed, Daughter. Daughter, I'm glad to hear you're in recovery. Eating disorders, as you well know, can be difficult to get and keep under control. They are associated with elevated mortality rates. So, let's be careful here. The fact that your parents have watched you struggle with food for 25 years and still carry on about it suggests that their food issues may be as deep-seated as yours. Do not jeopardize your recovery in protracted wrangling with them. You can certainly make a simple request. Could you try to stop talking about food and portions when I'm around? I find it destabilizing. I am not optimistic, though. They have had over 2 decades to make the connection between their obsession with weight and your struggle with food, and they have not done so. If they were going to be sensitive to your disorder, they probably would already. So if your request fails, try to see your parents outside of mealtime. Meet them for walks in the park or visits to museums or bookstores. Not many of us get perfect parents, and it's not uncommon for parents' strengths and weaknesses to shape those of their children. But there comes a time, too, for recognizing our parents' limitations and for creating healthy boundaries accordingly. Next letter. A song in his heart and a burp in his throat. I share a small office with 2 coworkers. We are all in our early 20s. At first, we got along fine. Then the sole male among us started singing audibly at his desk and burping loudly. Our coworker asked him to stop singing. He said he would, but he hasn't. And I've jokingly said, "Excuse you," after his burps, but they continued too. Advice? Signed, coworker. Coworker, to be clear, it is not your responsibility to teach your coworker appropriate workplace behavior. You can report his childish habits to your supervisor if you like, but it may be simpler to handle this directly. In a non-joking way, say, "Your singing and belching are disruptive and unprofessional. Please stop, or I will ask to have you transferred to another office." That should do it. If not, speak to your supervisor. There is no need to suffer bad behavior in shared workspaces. Reading between the lines of a non-invitation. In recent years, some of my siblings have shut me out of their lives because I left the religious community to which they belong. Their religion requires this kind of disassociation. Recently, my sister, with whom I was very close, called to say that she was getting married. She said the wedding was open to the public, but she didn't invite me, and I don't know if she wants me there. I want nothing to do with this religion or its setting. It harmed me psychologically. But this is my sister getting married. Should I go? Signed, Brother. Brother, I can almost set aside, for the sake of your question, the cruelty of a religion that would ask your siblings to shun you because you chose not to worship as they do. They didn't create the religion. I can even feel compassion for your sister, who isn't brave enough to stand up for you publicly in the face of church teachings. But my generosity withers when she calls you privately and refuses to level with you. Saying, I can't stop you from coming, is different from saying, I want you to come. Call her back and ask directly, do you want me to come to your wedding? Ask her to be honest with you and tell her that you aren't eager to return to the church, but you will consider it if she wants you there. If she expresses any ambivalence, save yourself the pain and send her a loving note instead. Signed, sealed, delivered. I like sending birthday cards to friends. It feels thoughtful and old-fashioned in a good way. But many recipients don't follow up with thanks. I don't need to be thanked, necessarily, but I would like to know that my card arrived. Thoughts? Signed, Card Lover. Card Lover, I can understand your desire for acknowledgement and even your curiosity about whether the Postal Service has come through for you. But if a minor gesture like mailing a greeting card creates an obligation for recipients in your mind, find another gesture, or upgrade to return receipt postage. I don't mean to sound harsh, but you're sending first-class mail, not diamond bracelets. Now from the April 24th, 2026 Boston Globe, Love Letters by Meredith Goldstein. I am a mid-40s single mother. I run my own business, so like many who are self-employed, my salary is inconsistent. I have been divorced for 10 years. 2 years ago, I met my boyfriend. He was extremely successful, and we were both thrilled to find out we had so much in common. About a year ago, he lost his job and decided to open his own business. It did not work out. And between maintaining his very high child support payments to his ex, he ended up financially ruined. At this point, I have to decide if I want to stay with him, which would consist of me supporting him, his kids, and his ex-wife. I've been doing that for a while. I feel like I've had enough. Help. Signed, Supportive. Supportive. How serious was the relationship when your boyfriend lost his job? Were you involved in the planning of the new business? What was your role in his life at the time? Based on the information you gave us, I can't tell whether you should be working to save a great partnership or whether the two of you became serious because he needed you during a difficult time. Please think about where you were in the relationship before the money was gone. Also, talk to him about what happens next. You can't sustain this support forever, so what does he plan to do? If he's overwhelmed and needs guidance, you can suggest that he see a career counselor and financial advisor. it's a good time to get help from professionals. It sounds like you're asking for permission to bail, which makes sense based on your letter. You're a self-employed single parent, and you mention nothing about loving this man. That said, if you do adore him, and you simply forgot to write that in the paragraph, please talk to him about this might get better. This difficult time could be very temporary. Signed, Meredith. Readers respond. Your responsibility is to your child not to subsidize this man's failures. He should be able to get another job and take care of himself, or petition the court for reduced child support payments. In no way should you pay his bills. No. He needs to get a job and start paying his own way instead of mooching off of you. Given L.W., letter writer, wrote nothing about why she is with this man and how she would miss him if he was gone, or what she gets out of this relationship, it seems time to end it. So this guy was extremely successful in his life right up until the time that he got serious with you. Now he's in financial ruin. Has this guy been playing you since day one? Also, you seem resentful of the child support payments this guy is responsible for. Those payments are to support his kids, not his ex-wife. Are you receiving child support payments from your kid's father? If so, do you tell people that your ex is supporting you? Didn't think so. No. You need to check with an attorney and a financial planner. A girlfriend does not support a man's children and ex-wife. There are other options besides leaving him or draining your finances. Consult an attorney and a financial planner now. Next, from the April 27th, 2026, Washington Post, Carolyn Hacks. What if parents never acknowledge their abuse? Dear Carolyn, growing up, my brother and I were frequently subjected to corporal punishment, like slapping and spanking. I've been resentful and have struggled with intrusive, violent thoughts from a young age that my therapist says stems from my early childhood exposure to aggression. This came up during a recent conversation with my mom. She shut me down and said she never hit us. She has downplayed it before, but not that explicitly. My dad also denied ever hitting us. I mentioned a time when he slapped me and my brother for denting the car with our baseball. My dad denied it. After my brother confirmed the story, my dad apologized, if that happened, but continued to say he didn't remember it. I think I can forgive them for hitting us. Parents are humans, and I know it was common back then, the 80s and 90s. But I'm having a really hard time getting over them not remembering this and other things that reflect poorly on their parenting, like making us skip meals as a punishment, or my dad laughing at our sports failures when we were teenagers. I'm so angry that these incidents, where I felt so helpless and miserable, were so insignificant to them that they weren't even worth remembering. I don't know how to proceed. I'm sick of feeling resentful towards them, and they tell me I need to stop dwelling on the past. I've spent years of therapy trying to stop thinking about these things, but it hasn't worked. My therapist thinks an honest acknowledgement of their failings would help, but they seem incapable of doing that. What should I do now? Signed, So Angry. So angry. Oh my, I am sorry and angry on your behalf. See, I had an 80s and 90s myself. I can attest that frequent slapping and spanking were not common. The trends weren't big hair, leggings, and child abuse. So if your parents taught you that, then they can rightly shove it. You equate their memory failures to the insignificance of these events to them, and maybe you're right. But I think, no, they're so significant, they're essential for your parents to block out. Your parents know what they did, how weak they were, how weak they still are, how much harm they did, and they simply cannot carry the full weight of the truth. Kids can misremember, yes, and make false accusations. But here's why I answered the way I did. Your brother backs you up. Your mother shuts you down. Their solution is you need to stop dwelling on the past. A non-abusive parent with a child in your specific distress would make it their priority to work with you, not brush you off. That's why I think your parents deny, deny, deny. I never hit you, laughed at you, withheld food. Sweet holy hell, I really am so sorry. That's why they shift blame. You need to stop dwelling on the past and minimize. Yeah, sure, those were just the times. Unscrupulous people can pull many psychological levers to dodge the truth of their own behavior. We hardly want for daily, highly public tutorials on how to gaslight people to the bejesus and say, I'm wonderful, you're the problem. Maybe the truth is that your parents are unscrupulous people who lack the strength, attention span, selflessness, and, benefit of one doubt, good parenting examples necessary for the compassionate, disciplined child rearing. Instead, they lost their tempers, acted out, abused their power, and brought out the worst in each other. It would be inexcusable, but an all-too-common story. Maybe in that reframe, your parents can make more sense. If so, can they haunt you less? You rightly want an apology, but they want to tell themselves a better story because, wow, and because they're no stronger, healthier, or more scrupulous now than they were then. I'm not a therapist. I'm just an opinionated typist. Run it by your person. But if I'm right, then you'll never get satisfaction from your folks. Plus, counting on anyone else to fix something for you gives your power away. Peace comes only from within. In this case, it comes from accepting that your parents are fundamentally limited people, and they don't have to keep limiting you. You can choose to leave them where they are and build yourself up from here. From a reader, I know someone in your position, but she's still in the same psychological place as your parents. Downplays it, says it's the only way to raise a child. As an adult, she's verbally abusive and cruel and doesn't even notice it. It may be small comfort, but the fact that you realize what was done to you was wrong means you are moving beyond it in a way. Not everyone gets there. I'm very sorry for what happened to you. Signed, Anonymous. Anonymous, something about this just cracks me wide open. It is so painful about the harmed child who cannot recover as an adult, but such a moving gift to show how angry our letter writer really is recovering, and probably doesn't even know it, till now. Thank you. More readers' thoughts? Both you and your parents are showing symptoms of PTSD related to your childhood abuse. Intrusive memories for you, and repression and avoidance for them. They are suffering. They just have no idea why. EMDR worked spectacularly well for me, and my story is very similar to yours. adult children of alcoholic and dysfunctional families, adultchildren.org, helped me release the anger and pain I carried from my childhood trauma. I wish for you the same freedom I have today. And now, Miss Manners, from the April 25th, 2026 Washington Post, by Judith Martin, Nicholas Martin, and Jacobina Martin. Dear Miss Manners, I am planning a birthday party for my 3-year-old daughter. Last year, for her second birthday, we did a small event at home, and she was pleased about it. I only invited friends from her daycare to make it special for her. For her first birthday, I invited her friends and their parents to our home. I also invited her daycare teachers. But it was a lot of preparation to do on my own, and the guests were not really friends of ours. Also, the daycare staff sat with the parents, which affected the social scene for everyone. I was really busy with all the activities for kids, and also with the cake and food. Even though my daughter really enjoyed the party, it lacked social value. For this year, we've booked a kids' venue for the party and are carefully choosing people to invite rather than ask every colleague and acquaintance of ours. For instance, I chose not to invite some friends of my husband's because I didn't want it to be a reunion for them. But I am having a lot of nervousness and cannot stop thinking about who to invite. I do not want to hurt anyone's feelings, but at the same time, I don't want our efforts to go in vain. I don't want to lose social status at this party again. I need some guidance on navigating the social dynamics of a birthday party. How do I balance inviting people who are helpful to me as friends with inviting people who have more social value? Gentle reader, how about not using your 3-year-old daughter's birthday party as a way to further your own social clout? You seem to state that as a goal at the beginning, and then we quickly lost the plot. Using family events to network is unseemly, if all too common. It leads to awkward interactions such as you describe, when really the focus should be on the children. Social value should not be measured by a child's birthday party, or bat mitzvah, or quinceañera, or a wedding. Your child's friends and their parents are the only ones who should be invited. Dear Miss Manners, I have a close friend who is obsessively on her phone at restaurants and concerts. She checks her social media feeds constantly. My daughter-in-law is even worse. She is on social media openly during family gatherings. I am appalled by both, but at a loss as to how I can politely ask for their full attention. Gentle reader, invite them out together. They will have so much not to talk about. Dear Miss Manners, I was at a restaurant, seated with 7 others. The wine steward came to our table with a bottle of wine, saying that a gentleman at another table would be honored to present this to me and my friends. I recognized his name as being a man I had briefly dated in college. I replied that we would be delighted to receive the wine. I don't drink, but all of my table mates did, and would like to raise our glasses in a toast to him in thanks for his generosity. The steward poured the wine, then went to the man's table, who stood to receive our toast. I never had this experience before and don't remember reading about how to properly receive such a gift. I have wondered if I responded correctly. I've also wondered if he intended this to be an invitation to renew our acquaintance and how I should have responded if I were agreeable. Gentle reader, you responded correctly. If the gentleman wanted to renew the acquaintance, he could have said so, as could you have done. Miss Manners assures you that everything after thanking him was optional. But if you are still thinking about it, go get him. Dear Miss Manners, my husband is almost bald, and we find it incredibly rude when people comment on it. Why is it that people think it is all right to openly joke about a man's hair loss? They would not do so to a woman with hair loss. It would be incredibly painful and hurtful. But no one seems to feel that it may be the same for men. If given the choice, most people would choose to keep their hair they had as a youth. Do you have a comeback remark that you could suggest when someone tries to humiliate him about his loss of hair? Gentle reader. What? With a frantic pat to the head. I swear it was all there yesterday. And that's it for today. You have been listening to articles and advice columns from our program, Since You Asked. This show is a production of Audio Journal, a proud member of the Massachusetts Audio Information Network. If you would like a hard copy of our program schedule, either in large print or braille, please call 508-797-1117. Archived editions of this program are available on our website, audiojournal.org. Or go to the Audio Journal app on your iPhone, iPad, or Android device. This is Alita. I'll be with you again next week. Thank you for listening.
You are listening to Audio Journal, a proud member of the Massachusetts Audio Information Network.
This is Bird Note. In higher animals, the brain is like a Lamborghini. Amazing engineering, but expensive to run. In a human, the brain uses about 10 times more energy than any other organ. A bird's system is exquisitely attuned to this expense. And, among several carefully studied species like the black-capped chickadee, a very smart adaptation has evolved. You can usually hear the black-capped chickadees call throughout fall and winter, but they aren't singing much. They don't need to. So in their brains, the centers that control how they learn and give voice to songs shrink. But as spring nears and the birds resume singing in earnest, these control centers in the brain rejuvenate. This same seasonal fluctuation appears true of the chickadee's hearing ability. Experiments have shown that a bird's hearing is more acute in spring. So is their ability to interpret sounds. This may help male birds tell the difference between a neighboring male he already knows and an interloper who's infringing on his territory. And more finely attuned hearing can also help a female bird rate the songs of males she hears so she can pick out the best partner. All of which means that seasonal changes in the gray matter itself put birds' brains in a class by themselves. For Bird Note, I'm Mary McCann.
WICN Public Radio is a proud partner of Audio Journal. Audio Journal provides news, information, and entertainment to visually and print-impaired residents of central Massachusetts. Audio Journal broadcasts are made possible through the use of a portion of WICN's broadcast frequency. 90.5 WICN is Worcester's only NPR affiliate and the voice of arts and culture in central Massachusetts. Visit WICN.org for more info.
Are you a senior who is dealing with vision loss? Would you like to learn about advocacy efforts on behalf of seniors who are blind? And about support calls, where you can talk with other seniors who are also dealing with vision loss. If so, join us, the Alliance on Aging and Vision Loss, an affiliate of the American Council of the Blind. To learn more, visit our website, www.aavl-blind-seniors.org.
Listen to Audio Journal on your smart speaker. Just say, Alexa, play radio station Audio Journal on TuneIn. Or, hey Google, Play radio station Audio Journal on TuneIn.